Are you the kind of woman who isn't interested in living the status quo life, who wants to hear from other women that are paving their own way while making waves? Well then, She Makes Waves is for you. I'm your host, Lindsay Mayuga. Join me as I follow my curiosity around what living a successful life really means. Let's dive in. Okay, so today we have Sean Goodwin on the show. He's been practicing law for 16 years and specializes in representing local businesses and creative individuals with their entrepreneurial matters. He lives and works in Evanston, and his clients include local small businesses, investors, musicians, designers, and scientists. Sean's role as a business attorney is to protect his clients and keep them out of trouble so they can focus on growing their businesses. He is one of the rare attorneys registered with the USPTO to practice patent law and specializes in intellectual property, i.e. patents, trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets. In addition, Sean's practice has evolved into including family estate planning to future encompass the range of his clients' needs. When not practicing law, Sean's three little girls keep him busy. Thank you for joining me today, Sean.
Thanks for having me, Lindsay. It's great to see you.
Yeah, you too. I mean, I feel like it's kind of a funny story of how I even connected with you. It's like, I remember being in my last business and I was doing your wife, Julie's hair. And I was like, wait, what kind of law does your husband do? And she's like, oh, he does trademark. And I always kept in the back of my head the 4 years I had the business, the comb, that I learned, like you learn everything on the fly as a small business owner, that I never had the trademark.
Correct.
So when my business partnership was crumbling and I was kind of reconfiguring my life, I was like, that's something I'm not going to skimp on in my next business venture.
Perfect.
And so I kept you in my back pocket. Julie never knew I was like keeping you, you know, I never told her why, I just asked, because like hairstylists ask questions, but I feel like we've all, like a lot of us as stylists, we've seen people that have to like rename their businesses, go through all these things because they get a letter from someone saying, hey, I own this. And so I feel like that's something I want to touch on.
That's great. And to be honest, you're one of my best clients because you refer so many people to me. And I think it's because you have their attention for what, an hour or two?
Yeah.
And you just start talking, right?
Totally. Yeah. So like, for instance, like I think I thought, and maybe you can clear this up for me. I thought because I had the LLC of the comb, a hair studio, I thought that I then owned it.
So that's, you're talking about two different things there.
That
is a business name, which is goes through the Illinois Secretary of State, and trademarks go through the USPTO, the United States Patent and Trademark Office. And that is, so that's a federal registration. And just to make it even more complex, there is an Illinois, all the states have their own trademark registrations as well, and which are not examined. And then the most common level is called it's a common law trademark, and that protects the geographic area within which you are providing goods or services. And the best example is a pizzeria, a restaurant that delivers pizzas. They have a common law trademark to the name of their business for the geographical range within their pizzas are delivered. So common law trademark. Next level is state trademarks, and the best is federal trademarks because you get trademark protection through for every single state in the United States. So there's many good advantages to that, and I highly recommend anyone who's starting a business before you start branding it and spending money on marketing and merchandising and even websites. You should definitely think through whatever name you want to use and approach a trademark attorney to help make sure that no one else is already currently using it for the same or similar name or same or similar services or goods. And then what we do as trademark attorneys is we do a clearance search to make sure that no one is out there that you're infringing, which can cause people to rebrand like the comb, and it'll save you a ton of money in the long run. And I think what you were alluding to earlier is the cost. The cost of getting a trademark is not that much. So right now, the USPTO trademark fees for federal registration, if they have the class and listing wording in their website already. It's only $250 per class. So, for example, your trademark for the hairstyling services and haircutting services is, I believe, class 41. So you'd only have to spend $250 for trademark application fees. And then whatever fees the attorney charges on top of that. And it all depends on how long that trademark search, the clearance search is. So there could be a ton of search results to sift through, or maybe just three or four. It all depends.
Yeah. Well, when you think about opening a business, like, it's something that I don't hear people talking about. And I definitely didn't hear anyone talk about it. So I literally was like, oh, can't do Mint Hair Studio. There already is one when I searched it on the internet. But like beyond that, I don't know that people, like, I don't know if it's like common knowledge that like that's a huge issue.
Well, I didn't go to business school. I have a background in biochemistry. Yeah, so this is something that I never knew either until I went to law school and learned about trademarks.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. I just think when it comes to like having a lawyer, I guess for me, I feel like it's so empowering. And it's something that like, you know, like I thought I was getting divorced. It felt so empowering to have an attorney. I, you know, like, I just feel like I find attorneys to be like, I don't know. I feel like, first of all, they have, you work a ton of hours, but two, like, it's like, I don't know. I just feel so empowered and protected.
Thanks. We try really hard. The vast majority of us really are very ethical. We really, really want to help our clients, especially if they're business owners. We want them to succeed and grow and bring more business back to us. So it's a win-win situation for everyone.
Yeah. And like, when people, do you find that people sometimes find you or approach you once they're in a bad situation when they could have initially taken like, yeah, like get the $250, you know, trademark, or have you review a contract that they just sent to someone, or they, do people find themselves like seeking you out in a bad spot? Or do you find that more people are like savvy enough to be equipped with you?
I would say it's not a 50-50, but there are definitely those situations where people are in a tight spot, and that's when they start seeking out, looking for help. I recently signed up for a referral service, and I'm not going to say which one online.
Yeah.
But literally every single one they sent to me was someone who wanted to file a lawsuit because they were in a bind. And I try not to do that. My whole stick is I want to prevent my clients from having to go to court. I'm married to a litigator, and I know how the litigation process works intimately, how expensive it really is, especially if you have, so everything a lawyer does during litigation, they bill you for. Whereas a business attorney, someone who does transactional work, we generally charge you in 6-minute increments. So 1/10 of an hour, and it's much, much more affordable to just get ahead of the complexity or whatever, you know, situation you find yourself in. And I stopped that referral service pretty quickly because I knew I just don't have the time to be a litigator in addition to doing this. That's when you start having to branch out, bring in associates, bring in partners to do the litigation for you, if you can just focus on one area of law.
Right. Yeah. And so as far as like for most, like, you know, a lot of people that listen have small businesses, but like, when you think about like a one man show or a smaller salon, like, what do you like, do you recommend? Cause I know there's a lot of people that like don't have contracts with their employees or don't have a contract with one of their renters. Like, what are they potentially opening themselves up to?
Oh, it's all a he said, she said situation. And if there's ever a lawsuit, you've got nothing to go back on. At least get something in writing at the very minimum. Because if it's all verbal contracts, then it really is, you expose yourself to so much liability. So I would highly, highly recommend, if you ever employ someone, make sure you get an employment contract, make sure you're paying the taxes, whoever, you know, figure out what you're doing, whether they're a contractor, and the laws regarding contractor rules have been changed recently. So reach out to an employment attorney who knows what's going on. Because if you're hiring someone to do something and that is primarily what your business entails, there's new rules saying that like they're not really a contract anymore, they're an employee and they deserve employee benefits, and you have to start paying employee taxes for them instead of them paying their own taxes. Same with leases, real property, anything to do with real property, make sure it's in writing. Make sure, if you can, get it reviewed by an attorney. There's a lot of like templates out there that people use.
Very popular.
Yes, to find stuff online, and not to talk smack, but there are certain websites out there that say that they will give you, you know, here's the forms you need, and they'll charge you a certain amount of money, and it doesn't seem that like it costs that much, and it's because it's really not tailored to your specific needs. So even though broadly, I mean, if nothing else, do that. But if you can, try to get an attorney to tailor the contract specifically to what your present situation is, and make sure that you're not exposing yourself to liability where it can become a he said, she said, I'm going to sue you for everything. And again, start a business, put all of the business assets into that LLC or corporation, and that will prevent any lawsuits from the damages coming at your personal situation. So your personal finances, your personal bank, your personal savings. Make sure you have a separation so that anything that you do for your business, they can only attack your business and what limited assets are in that business, to just limit your personal liability. Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. Because I know with like when COVID happened, there were like some hairstylists that were filing as like, I don't know if they were just doing it as individuals or something, and they were not able to qualify for like any of the unemployment stuff because but they were running legitimate businesses, but they didn't get that benefit.
Yeah. So that's called a personal proprietary business. Yeah. And that's when you're just doing it under your own name. And yeah, so there are benefits to just filing the forms with the state, Illinois Secretary of State, to start a business organization, LLC, corporation, nonprofit, whatever you want. In addition to that, the feds have also instituted a new rule. And I helped you out with this earlier this year. The beneficial ownership information. So you now every single new business that is formed and all current existing businesses, if you have filed any sort of paperwork with the state to start a business, you have to also file this new form with the feds to just say who the beneficial owner is, who's the owner, who's running the place. And you need to submit your forms of ID, either a driver's license or a passport, something like that. What the feds are trying to do is crack down on money laundering. So all these shell corporations that people set up to like pass money through, and it's all anonymous, and then you don't really know who owns it and whatnot. The feds are really trying to crack down on that. And for that reason, there's no more real anonymous shell LLCs out there anymore, at least within the United States. People will still go out to, you know, Bermuda or wherever else.
So what happens if you don't do that? Because I know, like, I would have never known about that new law had I not worked with you previously and had you say, hey, here's the thing you need to do.
Right. So there are some things. So if you have filed that organization, the paperwork before 2024, you have until the end of 2024, December 31st, to file that beneficial ownership information. If you file it, if you start a new company during this year, 2024, you have 90 days to file that BOI form. And if you start a new organization in 2025, you only have 30 days to file that BOI form with the feds. And if you don't do it, they can come back and fine you thousands of dollars. So this is, again, one of those things where it doesn't take very long. You just got to jump through a couple hoops and you will save yourself a ton of money in the long term if you just be proactive. And that's all it is.
I think when I was saying earlier that I just feel empowered, it's like just like that using words and laws and knowing them can kind of like that, like, I don't know. I just think it's such an interesting profession because I think it's intimidating to people. But when you like I don't know, like when a client sits in your chair, like even all my like female lawyer clients, I'm like, they're the biggest badasses because they're like really, they're not like, they don't come in hot. It's just, they know how to use their words and they know laws and they, I don't know. I just feel like, it's so empowering to like know that you have people that like know this stuff. Cause I think it's like another reason they're like, oh my God, having a small business, it's another thing I have to do. Like, it's just like, it always feels like something. And I don't know. I just feel like if you're doing it by yourself, I don't know. It just feels like it would be so daunting.
Yeah, it truly helps. And it's almost like a mentorship situation where the lawyer should know, you know, as long as they're following the laws and all the new laws that are coming out, they should know what's going on. And if you're one of their clients, they should hold your hand and walk you through the process and make sure that you understand what you're doing and make sure you don't fall into these fines or traps along the way that, you know, without that mentor, you just don't, you're not aware of, right?
Right.
So
like your area of expertise. And like, I know you had told me, like, we had something where you were like, hey, you got to update your address. Like what is like, you've kind of shared like with me, you know, like privately, like, hey, we got to get your address updated. So what's the situation, like, as far as like filing things and doing things, like you don't want people to be able to.
Right. So especially with the prevalence of social media these days and how some people are on there just to look for fights or, you know, cause chaos. If you have any publicly available information online, they can use that to dox you, which is bad, right? So they can release where you live and start a harassment campaign against you. And that can, or they can, you know, SWAT you, you know, call the SWAT team and say, there's an active shooter going on.
Oh my
there's
God.
All sorts of, yes. There's all sorts of like bad things to do.
Things you don't think about.
Yes. So you want to limit what personal information you have online. And one of the things when you go to file your LLC, when you start a business with the Illinois Secretary of State, they will ask for the business address and the agent's address. And the agent is someone who can be served with legal papers during regular business hours. So you need to give two addresses. And what I advise to all my clients is you should have, do not input your personal address into either of those boxes, because that is a way for people to quickly and easily look you up online and figure out where you live. You really don't want that. So you got to just make sure, like with your, you have a place of business. So
yeah.
Use that place of business and you're there during most regular business hours. So therefore you are the registered agent. You can be the registered agent. Use that same location address and just try to prevent your personal information from getting out there. And that's just another one of those privacy law things that I wish the feds were better about. Most companies, like, they will scrape as much information as they can off of you. And that's why they give you a free service, such as Facebook.
Right.
They just scrape everything they can and you give them a license. If you read the whole contract, whatever you do and say and interact with online, they track you and they will, that's how they make money off of you. So,
yeah. Well, even when you were just talking, I was thinking about how like, they're just like when you're filing things and doing things and getting a business ready, like I'm like, I've got three emails. Which email am I going to use for this? Okay. I just feel like it's very haphazard. I don't know if I'm alone here, but I feel like I'm like, oh, it's one of these three emails. And like, and I even feel fine sharing the address thing because it's my last address. So I feel even better about it, even if it's not fully updated yet, even though I'm working on that. But yeah, I just feel like that's like kind of brings me to the point of like, we're just when we're doing our business stuff, it's like we have the thing we do in our business. And then there's like all these other little tasks. And I feel like if anyone's like me, they're just like, just throwing darts.
Yeah, I say kicking cans.
Yes.
You're just kicking cans. Sometimes they get across the finish line. Sometimes they get a little bit further and you just have to leave them there for now and move to another can.
Yeah. And I kind of think people that have the courage to start their own businesses don't do it because they're doing it perfectly. There's a lot of people with like perfectly executed plans that never actually execute or actually move forward. So I find, maybe it's just, I'm talking about myself, but the people that are actually going to do it aren't really going to have all the information.
Right. You got to start somewhere and you're never going to have everything ready. Yeah.
I tend to take action and then I'm like, oh, we got a couple loose ends here. So I love that people can contact you, and like, it's just like working with you, it's so not intimidating. And I don't like, I feel like sometimes with my accountant, Tony, like, this is a dumb question. I never feel like I'm asking a dumb question with you. I think it's your bedside manner, no disrespect to Tony, but he's kind of like, Lindsay, I don't know. And he's always very nice to me, but I feel like I'm bothering him. And when it comes to you, I just feel like you kind of are like, oh yeah, no. Or like, I'll get one of those. Cause that's the other thing. Once you have a trademark or people know you have a business, back to the fraud stuff, I get things in the mail that say like, your trademark needs to be paid $1,000. And I'm always freaked out. I hate owing money. I don't like feeling like I don't have my shit together. And I just send you emails like, is this real? And you're always like, no.
Yeah. So that's one of the things I was talking about. Your publicly available information is online.
Oh, so maybe it is my current address.
So, so they're scraping information from the USPTO, and they will send these scammy emails, letters, whatever.
Yes.
And they will say, hey, you have a deadline due. And you may or may not have a deadline due, but they say, send us the money and we'll take care of it. And it's always like $1,000 more than it probably should be, or even more. And it's just like, no, it's not. So it's one of those things now where I've gotten to the point where every time I get a trademark registered, I will automatically forward the USPTO letter saying, hey, there's scammers out there. They will send you stuff. You have a registered attorney, on your application file. So therefore all communication should go through your attorney. Although the USPTO did just recently start copying you on some of the emails they send me, which is fine. That saves me an extra step, right? I don't have to forward it to you. I won't forget, stuff like that, which is great. But the scammers are everywhere. They're looking for easy, free money. And that's one of those things. You don't want to put out your personal information unless you really have to. And then if you have an attorney on file, they should deal with all that BS.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing of like, okay, that would be very costly to pay a scammer when it's like, or you could pay an attorney.
Right.
So as far, I was looking at your website and I was like, oh, you review like website copy and stuff like that. Is that correct? Is that another place that people?
Yeah. So at my last law firm, I worked at a place that did a lot of FDA, so Food Drug Administration. I have a background in biochemistry, so I was doing a lot of dietary supplement patent work, as well as the people who would, they're selling dietary supplements. So they're trying to hawk stuff online. My caveat is, I've read a ton of scientific journal articles about the beneficial effects of certain ingredients that go into the dietary supplements. Don't believe everything they say, because that's what I did. I would review all of the claims on the marketing, on their websites, on the labels, the radio programs where they would like hawk their products. They say whatever they can say, to try to sell you the product. And in reality, like to this day, I think I take fish oil. Fish oil is great, especially as you get older. Take fish oil, make sure it's manufactured properly. Vitamin D is very, very good. And always take probiotics after you take antibiotics. So the probiotics, take it first thing in the morning and make sure there's as many, like at least 10 different strains in there as possible, because the antibiotics will wipe out your gut flora. And that's like your symphony orchestra has been decimated, and you don't want to repopulate it with just like one section of violins. You want the full orchestra to be reintroduced into your gut. So take it first thing in the morning, because that is your stomach acid will actually break down the probiotics. And so if you take it very first thing when you wake up, slam a big bottle of water with it, it'll make its way down into your gut and you'll feel much better, faster, whatever. So
yeah, well, it's funny you say that, because I was like, you know what? I got to get my shit together with my supplements. And so I went on Amazon. This is a what not to do. And I was like, oh, this is the top rated like women's supplement.
And how much
So I
was it?
took it. Okay, but that wasn't the, like, it was, I think it was like $30 or something, but that wasn't the worst part. I took it for a few days and I was like, God, I feel like I drank too much coffee. I'm like anxious and like, and then I was like, I'm not sleeping well. And then I felt like I just like had indigestion. So then I read all the one star reviews and these people were like, they were like, I've been to the hospital. I haven't been sleeping. All this, the issues I was having. And I was like, oh my God. And then some, I asked one of my friend's partners and he said, there's too much B12 in there.
Yeah. So
And I was,
that's why the 5 hour energy drinks are full of B12s and vitamin B or your energy. Yeah. So
I just threw it away. I was like, but I was like, this is a cautionary tale. I know this is not where we thought this was going to go, but unbelievable because I almost lost my life to a B12 supplement.
Yeah, and not only that, the FDA does not do regular testing of what they put into dietary supplements. So you really do have to make sure that what they're selling you is actually legitimately on the label. So stick with the big brands made by big companies because they're more trustworthy rather than the fly-by-night, like, oh, look at this pretty label.
Yeah.
I have to tell that to certain people around here as well.
Yeah,
Like,
I
just don't
mean,
buy the pretty labels.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, Amazon's like the Bible. If people are, and then I was like, amateur hour over here. But so, okay, so one of your daughters was going to start a business, like, is there like five tips you would give her or one of them? Or like knowing what you know, knowing what like can happen?
To be honest, I love trademarks. And the very first thing you got to do is, how are people going to identify you with your services or goods? The really first thing you got to do is figure out what name you want for yourself and how to make that association between you and the consumer. And then you got to check the Secretary of State website, make sure the company name is available because that's not necessarily your trademark. We get a trademark, get a company name, you got to make sure the website and email are available as well. So those three things kind of have to make, you got to do them before you actually take the leap. And then it's just a matter of putting out the content, the marketing to make sure that can bring people in. The FTC is basically saying that whatever you say cannot be misleading and it must be truthful. So truthful in advertising. So don't mislead. Don't do anything that will people will expect one thing and you really can only perform the other. Those are the big things I would jump into immediately.
And what about slogans? Because remember, like, I had reached out to you and I was like, hey, someone's using She Makes Waves on the wall in their salon. And I was like, okay, I didn't come up with that, but I have created something that associates it to the hair industry. And you said that has to be a part of your branding for your business. So you talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So if the way trademarks work is, again, I was talking about the common law trademark, the state trademark, the federal trademark, but it also has to deal with the first time you use it. So the first user is the senior user. And if a junior user starts using it after that fact, they need to be aware of what geographic limitations they must stay within, right? So the first time, so they started using it slightly before you, right?
No, after.
Right after?
Right after.
Oh, did we ever send a cease and desist?
Well, we didn't, but I think I didn't, but I also checked and it's not something that I like see on their salon wall anymore.
Okay.
And here's the other thing. I think sometimes, like in that one, I was annoyed, but then I also was like, this is just information of like how I need to like make sure that I'm protecting myself. And also I'm like, that person also doesn't know. I don't think people are maliciously doing things. And if
right.
And so like with that one, I was like, okay, it's a salon in Texas. It's on a wall. I don't really like, it's annoying. But then I also was like, giving the benefit of the doubt, it doesn't really negatively impact my business. It's not like, so I kind of put it in perspective, but that's like, it was a wake up call.
Right. So once you have a trademark, you have to enforce it, right? And if you don't enforce it, And you know about it, there's a legal term called lashes. And lashes is a implicit license to let them keep doing what they're doing because you are aware of it and you've done nothing about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so I know I don't see it on the wall there anymore, but this is another great example of why it's good we're having this conversation. So if you see someone doing something and you don't say anything, you're signing off on them doing it.
Correct.
Well, son of a bitch.
Yeah. So the flip side of that coin is if you send a cease and desist and don't follow up with litigation, that's also considered, I believe, equitable estoppel. Basically, you are made them aware of it. You didn't follow through. So you've granted them an implicit license to keep doing what they're doing because you never sued them for trademark infringement. So
this has to do with boundaries and everything. I feel like this isn't just law. It's like when we don't say anything, we're basically giving people like can stay the course.
Right. So there's an art to sending cease and desist letters. You know, some people are really mean about it. Some people are very nice. If you open nicely and just say, hey, I've noticed you're doing this, please stop. If you want to continue doing it, I will be willing to grant you a limited exclusive license, but you have to pay me a percentage for whatever. So, and that could be another source of revenue. At the same time, once you grant a trademark license, you need to police it to make sure that the goodwill associated with the trademark itself is not falling below a level that will degrade the goodwill of your business, the original business, right?
Yeah.
So let's say, for example, all the franchise restaurants out there.
I was just thinking about franchises when you were talking.
Yeah. So all the McDonald's out there, they have a manual of basic standards that they must comply with if they want to continue using their McDonald's brand name. And so they're, in addition to using that manual, there has to be at least a yearly audit where someone from corporate comes out to make sure that you are complying with the manual so that the McDonald's brand name
doesn't lose its luster.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Good. Yes.
Yeah. So do you feel like there's creativity in your job? Because I was telling you before this episode that I was listening to this divorce attorney podcast, and I was like, God, he has so much creativity in his job, like with with his clients and what he works on. Do you find that the kind of work that you do you find yourself infusing that in, or do you feel like the kind of law you do is very straightforward?
So the estate planning is very straightforward. It's complicated, but straightforward. And I've been doing a lot of that recently. But the trademarks are awesome because the trademark, not only are you the creative aspect of it. So there's basically three levels of selecting a trademark. The first level, the most strongest level, is the fanciful. So a fanciful trademark is like Exxon. There's no dictionary definition. The next level below that is arbitrary, and that's it's very strong protection, not as good as fanciful, but this is basically using a dictionary word out of context. So like Apple computers. Everybody knows what an Apple is, but Apple computers is arbitrary. The lowest level is suggestive. So it's good protection. It's an inherent marketing advantage because you are suggesting your goods or services. And so the consumers can more easily make that connection. And a great example is Airbus. So it's an airline, flies in the air, it's full of people, Airbus, right? So that's always fun, figuring out that level or helping someone rebrand. And that's actually what I'm doing this week. Someone started using a trademark. After the fact, they came to me. I did a clearance search to make sure that no one else was using it. And I found some negative things, potential issues. And so I convinced them to rebrand. And so they had a secondary mark. They were like, we liked this when we were brainstorming originally. Let's see if we can use this. And so I've done that. And this one was, I'd say it's more on the suggestive level for what they're trying to do, which is good. And I just did a clearance search this morning and it looks like it's going to be okay. And so, So the next step is we're going to talk through it tomorrow morning and see if I get the go ahead to file the application.
Very cool. So they didn't, so you helped them come up with it?
After the fact. So
after, yeah.
But that is also, I've done this with other clients as well, where the initial clearance search was a bust. And they were like, can't use that. You're potentially infringing someone who has a registered mark. And then they would brainstorm with me. And I get this comment every time, like, do you have a marketing person you can go to help us figure out a new name? And I was just like, I really don't, you know? And I've asked around, I've asked some marketing people. Over this past weekend, I was at a party with someone who was a marketing manager at a big firm. And I was like, who do you go to for your trademark help? And they're like, oh, we do it. And so I asked them a couple of questions and they don't know trademark law at all.
Right.
They're like, oh, just put a Y in there instead of an I, you'll be fine.
That's like, so hard. Like, I find that people that are really good at things, they don't do everything. Like, my graphic designer doesn't help with the website or doesn't help with, you know, like, it's like she helped me make the logo and then she has people she refers you to. But yeah, I feel like it is like you end up spending more trying to just do it all yourself than finding experts.
Right. Well, the trademark
lawyer. You can't find this expert you're referring to. So at this, but I remember when I sent you like four names of the podcast and then I told you everyone really likes She Makes Waves and you were like best by far.
Yes.
Air Waves, Radio Waves, like, so yeah. I feel like maybe you're better at it than you realize.
I'm getting that impression, not from just you, but from other people as well. They're like, well, you know, you bounce.
You're good at that.
Well, yeah. In the sense that, like, I know the law enough that, and I've been doing this for 16 years.
Yeah.
A little bit longer because of law school jobs, but I don't know. It's fun. That's the creative aspect of it. And so,
great.
Yeah.
So like for someone who, like, I feel like a lot of people that listen to this, like run their own businesses, it's just them. Maybe the name of their business is like their name, Hair Co. or Studio. What about if they're like, it's my name, I don't feel like I need to trademark it.
Absolutely true. You cannot trademark a name.
You can't? Okay,
no.
I didn't know that.
So, with you, I was able to get your trademark because you combine Lindsay Mayuga into Lin May.
So it's fanciful.
It's fanciful. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's no one out there with a Lin May name that I could find and that the trademark examiner could find.
So if someone has a name, like you're saying, like it's their first, their last name, Hairco, they can't trademark that.
No, because hair is descriptive of what they do and company is such a generic word that one person can't have it. So it's like Murphy's Irish Pub, right? How many Irish people are named Murphy, right? Hundreds of thousands, right? Irish, that's descriptive, and then pub is generic. So descriptive terms and generic terms cannot be trademarked. We had to disclaim the word studio out of your trademark.
Okay.
Because it's a descriptive term. Right?
So what would you say to someone who's like, God, I want to grow my business. It's my name. Would you recommend that they change the name like you were doing with your client that you're working with this week?
It all depends on the type of business you're providing. So, for example, I thought long and hard about changing the name of my law firm.
Okay.
And I finally just settled on using Sean Goodwin LLC and Sean Goodwin Legal Services because the vast majority of lawyers out there, they go by their names or the combination of names, Goodwin and Goodwin or something like that. And there is a really big name law firm out there, Goodwin and Proctor. And I don't know if they've added on or whatever, but that's a huge firm that I am competing with. So in one sense, I'm just doing the same thing everyone else is doing. And in another sense, I probably should have figured out an arbitrary or fanciful name just because I'm competing with another big firm with a Goodwin name. Now, same with haircutting services. You see, what do you think? 50-50? Some people, it's just their name. Some people.
I think a lot of people, it's their name.
Right. So in that sense, they don't have to. You know exactly who you're going to, you know exactly what service they provide. And as long as you have a good marketing program, you can find them, right?
Yeah, or and so it'd be more if they were going to build their business bigger than them, that they'd want to maybe have that level of protection. Are you looking for an associate yet, Sean? Because I feel like I'm picking this stuff up pretty quick.
I'm of counsel for actually another firm, so Lexern Law Group, and I helped them get their trademark. And it's another solo attorney who does corporate law, and he's the one doing estate planning who trained me how to do it. And he was before then just going by his name, his last name. He decided to rebrand, and I helped him figure out Lexern Law Group, and then he brought me on, and it's like, oh, I could use you. Do all my
So it's kind of cool. Like, as people's businesses evolve, like you start doing estate planning, and if a stylist decides they want to grow their business larger than them, then it's a step that they could take at a given at the appropriate time.
Exactly. If you want to bring on a partner, it's best time to rebrand at that point, unless you really do have a lot of goodwill in the original name. And there is a lot of clients who associate you with your service or goods. Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it makes people, I sometimes think like, you're like, oh shit, now I have to change my name. It's like, no, you don't have to. But down the road, if your business evolves into being beyond you, I don't know. I think sometimes you can be like, oh, I did it wrong. When it's like, no, everything you're doing is working right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So where can people find you? I mean, I want everyone to have you file that thing for them, because I don't want people to owe thousands of dollars.
It's, as a lawyer, the BOI form was confusing. I had to read it several times, and the form itself is still like, it took me longer than it should have as a lawyer. Yeah. So you can reach me. My website is Sean Goodwin Legal, and I'm the Irish way, S-E-A-N, GoodwinLegal.com. I'm in downtown Evanston, and my phone number is 312-588-6762.
Amazing. Well, thank you for your time today. I personally learned a lot.
Good. Thanks, Lindsay. It was great talking to you.
You too.